This coming week, leaders of the Worldwide Anglican Communion will meet in Canterbury. Justin Welby, the Archbishop, has invited them in the hope of preventing a split in the Anglican Church over sexuality. But even before the meeting has begun, there's talk of people walking out, so what's the best way of managing the conversation? I discussed that with two contributors to a recently published book called Good Disagreement. Stephen Ruttle, QC, is a commercial mediator, and Andrew Atherston is a research fellow at Wycliffe Hall at Oxford. Both are evangelical Anglicans. I asked Stephen Ruttle about what the authors meant by that phrase, good disagreement.
Let me immediately duck the question by saying I understand the conceptual difficulty of postulating good disagreements. I would subtly change the language and make it adverbial. I'd say disagreeing well, because then the focus is on process. How well can we do what is in fact a disagreement? And certainly my own background as a lawyer, barrister, then mediator, is really focusing upon how people deal with disagreements. How do they deal with competing truth claims? One party says, this is what happened, this is what the agreement means, this is what you must pay me. The other party says, no, it doesn't, no, I didn't, no, I won't. Usually, if you stop talking to people, you demonize them, you think the worst of them. And the mediation process is there to say, look, we are human beings. Let's have a conversation. And you may need someone to help you have that conversation.
Well, let me put that to Andrew Atherton. Do you buy this theory, or would you belong to the school which says, actually, on this particular issue, the argument's gone on for too long, the divisions are too deep and bitter for some sort of magical process of mediation to make a difference?
I think mediation has an awful lot to offer. It doesn't quite get us to the end goal. So its real strength is in changing the mood music and trying to say, if we disagree very firmly on something, one response would be abusive language, violent blog posts, and suing each other through the law courts. Another is to ask, well, how can I bless the person with whom I strongly disagree? How can I show grace towards them? But I think at the end of the day, that might lead to gracious separation. Mediation is often aiming towards some sort of sticking together, perhaps some sort of compromise agreement after conversation. And we need to be able to say, well, perhaps separation is right, but let's do that in a way which is good rather than abusive.
So an intelligent process might make the whole business less painful, perhaps a bit more Christian, I suppose, is a good word to use in this context. But it won't in the end stop the split, if that's where we're heading.
I think that's right. So mediation is helpful in changing the way in which people respond to each other, restoring the Christian graces and virtues, but ultimately it can't provide theological answers.
And Stephen Ruttle, in this case, we are dealing with a matter upon which people hold fundamentally different views in a very passionate way.
Yes, what you have in essence are competing truth claims. These now are theological truth claims, and people will continue to disagree about them. Mediation does not magic anything away. Mediation is not a universal panacea. In the legal system that I came from, mediation supplements rather than supplants the role of the judge, the role of the courts, the role of litigation. But, and this is the important point, I think it does it, and in the Christian context, does it in an incredibly important way, as I see it like this. If you look at the concept, first of all, of loving and then of disagreeing, you have a really important question as to what comes first. My own background, being brought up to believe very clearly particular viewpoints theologically, the position was if someone disagreed with me, they were wrong. So I was taught first to disagree and then to try, and it was jolly difficult, to love on the back of that disagreement, and it's really, really difficult to do it. Mediation, I think, inverts that, or tries to invert it. It tries to say, let's focus first on the loving, and then see what the disagreeing looks like. The disagreeing will still be there, but the colour of the disagreement, the vice of it, the visceral nature of it alters if beforehand you have started to love, and by that meaning the conversations, the engagement, the listening, the process that Andrew was talking about.
On the other hand, Andrew Atherton, you would presumably hope that mediation didn't become such a focus of this effort that the actual fundamental truth, or what you would see to be the fundamental truth of the theological dispute, gets lost.
That would be one of my hesitancies over mediation, that it is by its nature morally neutral, that it stands in the gap between different positions. But Archbishop Welby at this major meeting this week can't be neutral in the debate. He is already, by virtue of being Archbishop of the Church of England, committed to a certain position. So he can't simply try and mediate a debate, try and hold the ring. He's got to declare his hand. He's got to, even if that means taking sides. And mediation tries not to do that.
Stephen Ruttle, would you accept that?
I wonder whether you're going to ask me that.
Well,
as a mediator, I'm focusing simply on the next conversation. I'm not, I think, able to say how should a leader lead. How does Archbishop Welby deal with these incredibly, incredibly difficult questions? I don't know. One of the roles I've fulfilled in the last year or so is being one of the Archbishop's facilitation team in the regional shared conversations, the process that has been set up and which will be concluding later this year. One of the questions raised in the materials for it is this, which I think makes a profound statement. The question is this: can we make the manner of our disagreeing a gift for a broken world rather than a scandal?
Goodness, how do you do that? Well, Andrew Atherton, how do you do that?
I think it's partly for members of each side in their entrenched positions to say, how can I bless the other side?
Exactly.
So there have been many calls this week from one side for the other side to repent. What about them saying, well, what practical ways can I do to bless those with whom I firmly disagree? That doesn't mean necessarily sticking together. It doesn't mean some sort of group hug. But it does mean saying, how can I extend grace to them rather than heap curses on their head?
Andrew Atherton and Stephen Ruttle.